Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Box Podcast. Brought to you by Starburst Magazine, the world's longest-running magazine of fantastic films and television.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Blue Box Podcast, our second episode already. I can't believe it. Feels like the time's gone really quickly from getting the podcast and doing all our prep to already on the second episode. It's been great fun so far. And yeah, what an episode this week. Whatever we thought of Wild Blue Yonder, I think we can all agree that it was not what anyone was expecting.
Hi everyone, Kieran here, co-host of the Blue Box Podcast. Happy to be back. I do apologise for the episode being a few days later than maybe we planned to record it, because I've managed to catch this cold that's been going around Manchester and around the Starburst office as well. So our plan to do these early in the week following the episode of Doctor Who lasted for a whole 1 week. But we'll get better from there. Anyway, Wild Blue Yonder. Personally, I was really impressed by it. Yeah, as Beth said, no one knew what to expect because they were being really, really secretive about this one, weren't they? And I think maybe a lot of people, a lot of Doctor Who fans, because they didn't know what to expect, were getting their hopes up, thinking, oh, it'll be past Doctors. Oh, Matt Smith's going to be in it. Oh, the Valeyard's going to be in it, whatever. But it was, in the end, just a really, really good episode of Doctor Who. I thought, did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Well, I think I kind of had mixed feelings, in the sense that, yeah, I think people did kind of get excited because obviously Russell T. Davis was so secretive about it, and we did think we were going to get some returning faces of previous Doctors and things. I know Matt Smith's name was thrown around there, and yeah, I think I was marginally disappointed that it wasn't more of a kind of, like, you know, 60th anniversary spectacular episode. However, I did think it was a very good episode, and I was watching Doctor Who Unleashed, the kind of behind the scenes program that they've got going on, which airs directly after it, and they were talking to Russell T. Davis on there, and he was saying how, you know, the reason that he kept the episode so secretive was mainly because he wanted that kind of classic feeling of, you know, suspense of not knowing what was coming next. And it is the kind of episode where if people had known too much about it, and if there had been too many kind of leaked things or spoilers, then I don't think it would have had the same impact, because it was quite unexpected, and the suspense part kind of required you to not be expecting what was coming. So I can see why he did that.
Yeah, like, I think in the episodes where they do have returning characters, like, it can be nice for it to be a surprise, but also if it isn't, you'll still enjoy it. But in this kind of story, it's a very, very intelligently written kind of procedural mystery. Like, it's a big cosmic horror, but there were also a lot of, like, elements of mystery and detective work that the Doctor had to do, and it was nice to be sort of on the back foot and to not know where it was going, to the same extent that the Doctor and Donna didn't know where it was going.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it definitely felt like a return to form for me, because I was saying last week how, you know, I really enjoyed the Star Beast, but I kind of felt like it was just fine. You know, it was an episode, but it didn't kind of blow me away. Whereas this one, you know, the moment where, you know, we kind of cut to the real Doctor doing his thing, and we realise that he didn't actually come back into the room, and we don't know who that is that Donna's talking to, and I actually, like, sat up straight on the sofa because I wasn't expecting it, and I kind of went, oh crap, like, I wasn't expecting to be shocked by Doctor Who in that way, and I haven't been for many years, so that was kind of a nice return to form of, like, something very creepy, I thought. But I don't know, marks out of 10, I would probably say, I would say maybe like 8, 8.5 for me. Definitely better than last week's episode. Still didn't think it was the best kind of episode of its kind. I think I was definitely more creeped out by it was kind of giving vibes of like Midnight and sort of old episodes like that, kind of similar like suspenseful episodes where we've got kind of an unknown entity. And I definitely didn't think it was quite as effective as some of those previous kinds of episodes that we've seen. I don't think anything will ever top Midnight for me, but I did think it was very... I thought it was a return to form. So yeah, 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
How about you?
Not much can top Midnight, but I definitely think it's up there. And I think, you know, once the people who are disappointed about it now, I think that will calm down. It will be looked back upon as just a classic, you know, really good sci-fi horror episode of Doctor Who. To be honest, I think I'm leaning towards 10 out of 10. I think it is. It's
really?
One of my favourite episodes in a long time.
Wow.
I just love this duo of the 14th Doctor and Donna. Mm. I think they're so good together. They're funny, they're emotional, and the writing was top form. And I think it was scary and weird, and I just don't have much to complain about, really.
Yeah. Well, I think that high praise. I did think it was very good, and yeah, you're right. I think just because David Tennant and Catherine Tate like have such great chemistry, yeah. You know, that hasn't been lost over the past however many years it's been. I think it's been like 14, 15 years, has it? And it's that chemistry is definitely still shining through. And I like the fact that this Doctor is, I think, also a little bit more affectionate towards her, perhaps because of that. He's, you know, less afraid to show kind of care and concern towards Donna. I mean, not that he was ever particularly cold with her, but I think he was a lot more like the kind of, you know, when she's sort of freaking out about, oh, you know, where are we? And they're kind of initially sort of panicking about being trapped without the TARDIS. And then he kind of, you know, like grabs a hand, kisses a hand, and like, you know, I will get you home. And I thought that was like a really nice little moment that you might not have seen with kind of previous doctors, which I thought was kind of a clever way of putting an individual stamp on the 14th Doctor.
He's definitely more emotionally mature, which is nice. It feels like, on like the behind-the-scenes angle, it feels like David Tennant putting being 15 years older and his own life experiences into it. But then in the universe, it's the Doctor showing how they've developed through, you know, gone on from the Time War traumatised Doctor of the 10th Doctor and, you know, being all these other doctors who've had long lives in the meantime.
Yeah. And I think I quite like the fact that it started to feel a little bit like this is a different doctor.
Yeah.
Like this isn't just the 10th Doctor returning. Because I think one of my slight criticisms up till now has been that, you know, obviously because David Tennant's used to the role and they haven't had as much time to kind of explore this. Usually when we kind of have like a post-regeneration doctor, we have a little bit of an episode where they're kind of struggling to find themselves and kind of come into their own, and we have that kind of post-regeneration slight chaotic vibes coming from them. And we didn't really get that particularly with this doctor, but like obviously for obvious reasons, but it kind of felt a little bit like it made it feel like it was just the 10th Doctor returning and not like it was, you know, a completely different regeneration, which despite having a different face and perhaps, you know, because they have, I don't know, the same brain structure or something, I don't know how regeneration works, but it felt like it was obvious that they would be similar to the 10th Doctor, but I'm quite glad that we're now starting to see the sort of slight subtle differences, and they are kind of trying to make it clear that it's like a completely different regeneration. You know, I think that's important to see, just for kind of continuity reasons, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess with only 3 episodes they decided to just like go straight right into it, because otherwise, you know, he'd be post-regeneration trauma. Oh, I've regenerated again.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of work to just jump straight in for that reason. Have we got any other kind of initial thoughts about the episode before we bring on this week's guest?
I like that it sort of brought up the issues from the Jodie Whittaker era of the Timeless Child in the Flux. I thought because it would be very easy for Russell T Davies just to sort of never mention that and brush it under the carpet. But it's nice to see some emotional fallout of that on the Doctor as well.
Yeah.
Because I thought Chris Chibnall had all these big ideas, which were interesting maybe from a plot perspective, but never really got around to like going under the surface of how they'd emotionally affected the Doctor. And, you know, Russell T Davies has actually brought that into it in an interesting way. And that was nice to see how that played with Donna bringing them up with him.
Yeah. I think it would have been, much as I kind of personally, I guess for those of you actually probably don't know, I'm not a massive fan of the Jodie Whittaker era, like many of us aren't. But I do agree. I think it would have been very disingenuous to kind of try and completely, you know, brush it under the carpet and kind of rewrite everything that happened there, and it would have been very kind of it wouldn't have been very respectful to, you know, everyone who worked on that era. And it, at the end of the day, like, it happened. It's whether you like it or not, I mean, it's part of canon now. You can sort of ignore it personally if you want to, but I think within the show they can't really just decide that they don't want to deal with that. You know, it's too big a plot point to kind of, the fact that obviously in Flux half of the universe was apparently destroyed, it's too big a plot point to kind of brush over. And
I mean, I suspect it's never going to be mentioned again now. He's acknowledged it and because, you know, there's still half a universe left.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair though, a lot of things like that don't get mentioned really, because it's like, for example, the fact that the universe apparently got completely rebooted and we had Big Bang 2 during Matt Smith's era, you know, like, that never really gets mentioned anymore, because it's just kind of like, well, you know, that was that. It happened. And it's just like all of these various invasions of Earth that have happened over the series. They might get referred to occasionally, but they're not kind of, you know, we don't sort of deal with the trauma of that continuously, because we'd be here for quite a long time.
God, yeah, if I'd like lived through 20 alien invasions, I'd just be like lied down under my bed like all day screaming for the rest of my life.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would be a little bit difficult to kind of continuously bring up everything that's happened in 60 odd years of lore of the show. And on that note, I think it is time now to bring on our special guest for this week, who is Starburst's own Paul Mount. He is an avid Whovian and always has a lot to say about the various different episodes and eras of Doctor Who, so we're thrilled to have him on the show, and we're going to be getting his thoughts on this week's episode. Hello, Paul.
Hello there. Good morning to you both. How are you? I like being described as special. That's very nice. Thank you.
Good morning. Yeah, we're all right, I think, other than slight illness over on Kieran's side there.
Yes, you're very safe over in Wales.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go that far, but at least I'm away from the germs.
Yes.
You're safe. You don't have to come into the hotbed of germs that is the Starburst office.
Yeah, quite.
So, yeah, an interesting episode this week. Wild Blue Yonder. Shall we start off by getting your kind of initial reaction to the episode and maybe a mark out of 10, if you will?
Certainly. Well, I went into this episode, as we all did, not knowing anything about it, because they kept it quiet and kept it secret. And I think part of the problem with the episode, I think I didn't, but a lot of fans, I think, built up anticipation of what they thought was going to happen in it. They were expecting all these cameos and previous doctors and monsters. And I didn't expect any of that. And I think a lot of fans seemed to be disappointed because it didn't give them what they want, which is often the case with Doctor Who. I didn't think we were going to get any of that. I knew it was going to be something quite strange, and it certainly was. And it occurred to me after watching it that what we have with these three episodes, Russell T Davies has sort of compressed the structure of one of his normal seasons into three episodes. You have last week's Star Beast, which was a sort of a fun run around, an introduction to the series again. Then this one, which would appear later in a normal series, slightly darker. And then next week's, I know we haven't seen the Google yet, but clearly that's going to be a bit demented. So it's as if he's compressed the elements of his Doctor across those three episodes. So I knew this was going to be a bit more like Midnight or Turn Left, even Love and Monsters, which is a favourite of mine. Something a bit different. And it reminded me of things like Ark in Space, with Anna, which I know is one of Russell's favourite episodes, that sort of the Doctor and Donna arrive on a deserted spaceship and find out what's going on. I thought, to cut a long story short, I thought it was terrific, really atmospheric, very creepy in places. I don't get creeped up by Doctor Who these days, but I like to appreciate when I think people can be creeped out by it, youngsters can be creeped out by it. And I think there was a lot of quite dark stuff in this, really, for that sort of tea time audience. And I thought it was very clever. I thought the idea of the Nox things was a really interesting concept. Very, as I said, very, very reminiscent of things like Midnight as well. And it sort of, it really was something a bit different, but it was also recognisably Doctor Who. It fits in with the Doctor Who format. But I like the fact that it's pushing at the edges of that again and saying, well, it's, you know, it can be this, it can be quite a dark sort of Event Horizon type horror story. And I think it was a horror story, a sort of a tea time horror story, but I thought it was terrific. I've only seen it once. I meant to watch it again, but I haven't had a chance to speak so far. But it's one of those episodes that I think the more you think about it, the more you take from it and the more you pick up on the subtleties of it. I thought it was great anyway.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely one of those that kind of grows on you and almost improves with a second watching as well. Because I definitely, when I was watching it for the second time, I liked it even more than the first time. You almost have to kind of absorb it. And that's interesting what you were saying about you kind of predicted that it wasn't going to be, you know, anything like kind of past Doctors returning or all of the things that people were speculating. And I think that's kind of interesting as well, what you were saying about it being more, these three episodes being more like a kind of condensed series. And I think that's definitely the vibe that I've been getting. I think it's for the most part quite positive, but there have been obviously some people I think have been saying I've seen quite a lot of comments saying it's nice and they're good episodes, but it kind of doesn't necessarily scream 60th anniversary. So I guess it's kind of open to interpretation whether you're enjoying just having more of a mini series or whether you're kind of looking for something more anniversary spectacular.
It's a matter of taste, isn't it? Like, I think there's definitely fans who want continuity and aren't that bothered about, you know, whether it's a good story or not. I'm just loving...
I mean, we had past Doctors in The Power of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Why would you do that again two episodes later? I just couldn't see the logic of that.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Because that was the USP, in a way, of Power of the Doctor. So why would you do it again?
Yes.
But I think, again, because these episodes are straddling the anniversary, fans have just thought, well, there must be lots of links to the past. But they're not anniversary specials. They're Doctor Who specials running across the anniversary. Mm. They're not celebrating the anniversary. They're Doctor Who episodes that happened to be screened at that time. But I don't think they were ever sold by Russell T. Davis or anybody as, these are episodes celebrating Doctor Who. These are episodes that bring back David Tennant and Catherine Tate showing across the anniversary.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we had Tales of the TARDIS. Because I think Russell said in Doctor Who magazine, he thought they hadn't done enough for the anniversary. So they did those to say, well, look, this is our celebration. The episodes are just Doctor Who moving forward. And I think the fans have got themselves worked up into a frenzy because they didn't get what they told themselves they were going to get. And that's what fans do tend to do. Yeah.
And I think having a new series, as you said, it's a series condensed into three episodes with one of the all-time greatest Doctor and Companion teams. That's a lovely anniversary treat. Plus Tales of the TARDIS, plus, you know, the Daleks in colour, plus, you know, all the other little things that are being thrown in.
I think the fans have just convinced themselves that the episodes themselves are going to be the big anniversary, but there's so much other stuff that's been around, whether you've liked it or not. It's all out there. But I think having the most, let's face it, the most popular Doctor back is a celebration in itself as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least you've definitely got the sort of slight, you know, anniversary celebration feel with having an old Doctor and Companion back. anyway, yeah, in a sense. Right. So I think I think that's definitely a good point. So in terms of marks out of 10, then what was your kind of verdict?
I think I would be giving this a 9 out of 10.
Okay, solid, very solid. And yeah, what
are your marks? I mean, I'll hear it in the podcast. What are your marks?
I gave it 10. I was very, very positive. Yeah. I gave it 10.
Yeah. I was tempted, but that leaves no room for improvement or anything better. So I thought, well, I'll hang back just to see what's coming.
So that's a good point. Yeah.
It was sort of near as perfect, really, I suppose. I mean, there's nothing, I couldn't really fault anything in terms of the story, certainly.
Mm. Yeah, I gave it 8.5, so I wasn't far off you. I think there's perhaps a kind of because I was the most critical on the last episode as well. I think there's perhaps a sense of kind of nostalgia that's like slightly holding me back because I'm kind of like waiting for something which kind of really catapults me back into my childhood. But maybe I'm kind of holding out on something that's never going to happen, really, because you're never going to quite recapture the same feeling as you had when you watched those episodes at the time. So it's perhaps I'm just
you can never be young again.
No,
I mean, for me, well, of course, me being catapulted back to being young would be Black and White, but we won't go there. But I think that it's just been so nice to have David Tennant back, and that sort of catapulted me back to that period when Doctor Who was like King of the Hill again. When everybody was talking about it was the number one show, and it brings that feeling back, if nothing else.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think it's nice to kind of get a sense of, because I definitely got, I got a sense of nostalgia as well, seeing David Tennant back, so it's nice to have.
Nostalgia, but at the same time, it's also moving forward.
Yeah.
It's a nice, that's what I mean. Getting that hand in hand.
That's what I think. Yeah, that's why I think it's so good about it, because this isn't the 10th Doctor. He looks like the 10th Doctor, but it isn't. And I think that there's enough in the writing in David Tennant's performance to make it clear that it's not quite the same person. And that's moving it forward. I mean, it would have been easy to do an untold tale of the Doctor and Donna from the fourth season, but what's the point in that? And I think moving it forward in this way is what's thrown a lot of the fans, because that wasn't what they were expecting.
Yeah, I think it's provided a nice, it might not have been what people were expecting, but I think it's provided also a nice jumping on point for new fans. So, well, I say that I am forcing him to go back and watch the earlier episodes with David Tennant, because I'm a strong believer in doing it in order. But I have convinced my my friend who is Italian and has never watched Doctor Who. I've convinced him to try and get into it. So I am going back and forcing him to watch earlier episodes, because I believe in the full experience. But I think this will also provide a nice point for him to kind of jump in and keep up with the modern series. And I think anyone who's kind of been wanting to get into Doctor Who for a while but's kind of been put off by, you know, oh god, like 13 series, you know, it's a good point to kind of dive in
I agree. I mean, I think it's off-putting for people coming to Doctor Who who might be interested, but think, well, there's 60 years of it, where do I start, where do I go in? And I think that's where Russell T. Davies is very clever, in that he pitches certain episodes and certain points that you can go in. Doesn't matter about the past, which is why I love the Christopher Eccleston series, because there was so little backstory there, little things here and there, but nothing major. And I think you have to bear in mind that Doctor Who is organic and it's growing, and its audience has to as well, and it has to appeal to people who've watched it for years. But I think equally as important, or perhaps more important really, is finding an audience that will carry it forward and keep going. And I think the vibe I'm getting for these specials, it's very much Doctor Who, but with a twist and an entry point for new people and people who perhaps wandered away.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's got to keep on changing. It's got to keep on evolving and appealing to a new audience. So yeah. On that note, it is time for this.
It's time for the Blue Box Quiz.
Oh, yes. I'm dreading this.
He has been forewarned. Yes. Paul, it is time to test your knowledge, to test how closely you were watching, to test how much of a true Doctor Who fan you really are. Your entire reputation.
Do we really have to do this?
I've
been around for years. I'm a Doctor Who fan. You don't need to quiz me.
Oh, we do. We absolutely do. Yes, it is time for the Blue Box Quiz, where we will be putting Paul to the test on his knowledge of the previous episode and see how closely he was watching. So
all you have to do, Paul, is do better than Mike. So if you can get two questions right, I think you'll be safe.
Yeah, I was going to say it shouldn't be too difficult.
I was really frustrated because I got all Mike's questions last week. I thought, yeah, I know all that. So I'm probably going to get one this week.
Well, let's hope not. I'm sure you'll do better than that. I'm sure you will.
Right.
So, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go for it.
Okie doke. So, question number one. What was the name of Donna's choir teacher that she mentioned in the episode?
Mrs. B?
Very close. I think I'm going to give you that. It was Mrs. Bean.
Bean, right, okay.
As in Mr. Bean.
When I watched it, I thought I didn't quite catch that because the music was so loud and it was very exciting. But I knew it was something like B. I just didn't catch.
Because they did the thing where the doctor was testing the two Donnas to see which one was real, and he asked, why is it funny? One of them says, because it's a vegetable, it's a woman. The other one says, it just is. And I thought, none of them have said the actual answer, which is, because it's like a female Mr. Bean.
Yeah, that was a bit odd.
Yeah, I'll probably pick up on that next time I watch it. But it was in the moment, I just thought, what, B? So I think I deserve the point for that.
I am going to give you the point for that because you were very close. You were very close. But yeah, I thought I did. I kind of thought that was a bit odd as well. The fact that because the doctor actually initially believes that the not thing alien imposter Donna is the real one because she's the one that says it just is when he said it's funny, and I actually thought that was kind of a more believable kind of Donna answer. I was surprised that it was actually the real Donna that said, you know, because it's the name of a vegetable. So I was I was kind of surprised that it was that way around, and I also thought they kind of played off a little bit too much the fact that the doctor initially got it wrong and that he very nearly left Donna behind and she nearly like died, and I thought they were a little bit kind of blasé about that, to be honest. I think Donna, I was expecting to be a lot more annoyed with the doctor when that kind of initially happened.
Yeah, I suppose she was just so relieved to be saved that she didn't want to make a big thing of it. But it was. I think those last few minutes were so sort of frantic and so much going on. It's a bit almost information overload. You can't quite take it all in. After a slow start, it really kicks into gear and doesn't stop. And I think it's easy to sort of misunderstand things or not quite get it, because Russell's a very subtle, clever writer, and I think that's what you say about repeated viewings. You will get more and more out of episodes like this by watching them again.
Yes, definitely. Question number two. What did the Doctor nickname the robot that he and Donna found aboard the spaceship?
Ooh, blimey. What did he nickname it?
To be fair, this is very obscure. It was mentioned.
No, Jimbo. Jimbo.
Yes. Well done, yeah. Jimbo. Yes, correct. Yeah. Two out of two so far.
Well, okay.
You're doing well. Yes, it was Jimbo, which I just thought was a nice little kind of reference to. I think he's called things Jimbo before, hasn't he?
Was it not Donna who calls him that first?
I don't know. It might have been Donna that calls it that first. I'm not sure, but I definitely remember the doctor saying it anyway. I'm not sure. But
cute little robot.
Very cute little robot. And as it turns out, obviously part of the master plan of the previous pilot of the ship to save the universe from the not things by slowly blowing up the ship. So I thought that was an interesting plot line.
Yeah. Well, it's a very clever conceit, because you've got this robot there for no reason, moving very slowly, and with everything else going on, that's still in the back of your mind. What's that got to do with it? And when it all comes together, you sort of think, well, that's so clever.
Definitely. Yeah, it's. I still wasn't kind of 100% clear on why it was that the not things kind of couldn't understand stuff if it was slow, though. That was the one thing that I kind of got, that it might be easier for them to kind of assimilate people if their like thought processes are really fast, yeah, because they can get, yeah, more of a good reading on them. But I kind of, yeah, didn't get why they couldn't really sort of understand at all if it was slow.
I think they're the kind of villain that they work better when because you don't quite understand them, like the monster, yeah, in Midnight, because you don't know what, yeah, it is. You never see it. You're never quite sure where its, yeah, powers come, right, from. That's kind of what makes it scary.
Well, yeah, it's quite nice to have an enemy or an adversary or whatever you want to call it that you can't apply all the rules of logic to, it because it does things that you can't explain. Because aliens would. You know, why would aliens behave completely like we do or the Doctor does? It's nice to walk away thinking, well, I don't understand why it did that, because you wouldn't necessarily. You know, if it's an alien, you're not going to necessarily understand why it does the things it does or how it does them.
Yeah, and I do think when Doctor Who does horror, it kind of, well, horror-ish things like this, yeah, I think it definitely does it very well. I think there is somehow, like, nothing creepier. You know, there have been some Doctor Who episodes that are, to me, scarier than kind of the average horror film, because there's just something about that kind of psychological tension.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as horror is concerned, I much prefer something which is subtle and psychological rather than slasher movies, because I can't, people just running around screaming to somebody slashing at them, it just doesn't entertain me, because it's too nasty. But yeah, if you've got something which is creepy and eerie, that's much more scary. I mean, yeah, the bit where the duplicate Doctor sort of becomes this spider-like thing in that first scene, that was really weird, because I wasn't expecting it. It's very much a sort of a Jay horror type trope.
Yeah, to see that
in Doctor Who, yeah, it just works much more as a horrifying thing.
Yeah, and it allowed for different kinds of scenes with them. So, you know, you have the scenes where they look like the Doctor had done, and it's the psychological horror of working out whether they're real or not. Yeah. Then you've got the creepy thing, like him, you know, bending back and going on all fours and putting his head through his legs and that kind of thing.
That's right.
Which is like a different kind of horror. And then you've got the full-on weird, like, scary action scenes when they go massive and start chasing. Yeah.
And chasing, I think that scene where you suddenly see their teeth, the sort of like fang-like teeth. Mm. At least the Doctor and Donnie, your friends, suddenly look almost like vampires.
Yeah, that's
stuff which I find more disturbing.
It's definitely very unsettling. And I know it was definitely a kind of an effective return to the sort of hiding behind the sofa, because I was actually watching it. I was babysitting my next door neighbour's kids, and they're not actually Doctor Who fans, so we didn't end up watching it live at the time. But then after we'd watched something else, we watched a Disney film. It was Zombies 2, for anyone that's interested.
Okay.
But after I'd put them to bed, and I was watching the Doctor Who episode on catch up after I'd put them to bed, and then Lila, the little girl, she came downstairs and kind of to get a drink of water or something, and then she ended up staying for 5 minutes with me and watching a tiny bit of the episode, and then she of her own accord decided to go back to bed because she was too scared. So I know it must have been an effective return to form, definitely.
That's what I like to hear. I'm still trying to get my head around the expression "not Doctor Who fans," though. What sort of people are they?
Well, they've just never watched it, because I don't know. They're just, maybe because they were sort of too young when it kind of.
That's
returned,
no excuse.
So.
That's no excuse.
No excuse. I will make it my mission to get them into it.
Thank you.
A slightly more difficult question now, which I thought I would throw in just to ring the changes. This question isn't necessarily kind of from the episode itself. It's actually something that was mentioned on Doctor Who Unleashed, but you may have been able to get the answer from having watched the episode. My question is, what animal was the design of the pilot of the spaceship based on?
That was a horsey horse.
It was a horse. Well done. Yes, on Doctor Who Unleashed, they explain that. Yeah.
That's right. Well, funny enough, when I saw it, I thought, that looks like a horse.
It does.
I was quite pleased when I saw Unleashed and they confirmed it.
Yeah. I thought it looked more like a bird or a kind of like dinosaur, a pterodactyl kind of head.
Yeah, it was the curve of the head that made me think that looks a bit equine. Yes.
Yeah, well, it kind of looked like a sort of a skeleton of a horse rather than like the horse itself. But I thought it was quite interesting on Doctor Who Unleashed. They were talking about how the language of the ship as well, where, with all the numbers and everything, and all the markings are based on, they were imagining if an intelligent horse-like species evolved, they were talking about what kind of, how would their language evolve, how would they communicate, especially their written language, and they spoke about how they wanted the marks that made the numbers to look a bit like hoof marks or marks that horses could make in the ground with their hooves, which I thought was very interesting. I loved the amount of thought that goes into things like that.
Well, I love seeing all that detail that, you know, 95% of the audience won't even have noticed that, but they went to the effort of doing it and designing it and making it work. And I love that sort of thing. It just shows how much they care about what they're doing to do things that, you know, most series wouldn't bother with, just have buttons or dials. You wouldn't think about stuff like that, but they really thought about it. And I love that.
Yeah.
And I liked how, because the Doctor didn't have the TARDIS or the sonic screwdriver, he didn't have the translation circuit. So there's a lot more of, you know, him having to actually work things out intelligently rather than just, you know, pointing a gadget at things and everything being translated.
But I mean, and it was really nice not to have the sonic screwdriver there. You know, as you say, normally he would just wave it about and magic things would happen. But he had to work it out with his own mind and just become like a detective. I mean, I love that. So I hope they do a bit more of that sort of stuff in the future.
Definitely, definitely. I liked that kind of little joke as well when Donna's saying like, oh, yeah, the TARDIS translates for me, but I thought you knew like 50 billion languages or whatever it is. And he's like, yeah, well, I know 5 billion and 7, but not that one. Like, you know, so it's quite funny seeing when the Doctor kind of appears more human in moments of weakness like that.
Yeah, I do like that, when you saw the Doctor exposed, if you like. You know, he hasn't got his toys and his tricks. He's got to use his wits.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't see enough of that, so I'd like to see more of that.
Definitely,
Russell, if you're listening, take note.
Yes. Make a note of that. The next question is...
Ask me another.
Who does Donna say is hot?
Oh, Isaac Newton.
Isaac Newton, it is indeed. I think there's quite a lot to say about that little plotline. But I think the first thing I'll say is that I actually did quite enjoy the idea of like when the Doctor says, oh, like he was, wasn't he? Oh, is that who I am now? And I quite like the idea of, I thought that was a nice little kind of subtle addition there, because I like the idea of, we've never really kind of explored, you know, potentially the Doctor having different, you know, sexualities and things, and there's definitely been a lot of chemistry with like male companions in the past, like, you know, the second Doctor and Jamie, a lot of people kind of obviously shipped them and sort of enjoyed the chemistry between them, and I quite like the idea that sort of we still might not see it, but that kind of sets up the potential for perhaps
they almost did that with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, but sort of backed away from going into it much.
They danced around that quite a bit, I think, towards the end of her time. But I've got no problem with stuff like that. It's clearly sort of a little joke between the two of them. But it opens up the possibility that the Doctor... I think the Doctor doesn't necessarily think about stuff like that as an issue. Mm. It's just part of being alive. Well, part of being alive. So he doesn't... You know, I know Russell likes to prod the bear quite a lot, and I think he prodded several bears in the last couple of episodes. But... get over it, really. It's a quick line, which is quite funny. Move on and enjoy the story.
Yeah,
I think a lot of fans get themselves so worked up about these little details because it's woke, and I hate, God, how I hate that word.
Oh yes,
but
agreed.
They focus on that. A Doctor Who is dead, a Doctor Who is ruined, a Doctor Who is gay, a Doctor Who is this, that, and the other. Watch the bloody story and enjoy the story. Don't worry about this stuff.
Well, speaking of fans getting worked up, while we're on the subject of Isaac Newton,
this is the
controversy of the week, that there's been quite a lot of people who have a problem with the fact that they have cast an actor of colour as Isaac Newton. So that's been a kind of interesting development this week. I don't know what people's thoughts are on that.
I mean, my take, like, ultimately it's a silly little comedy scene and it doesn't matter and it's not worth getting that angry about. I do think that, you know, I'm all for, you know, increased representation, and I think all these decisions they're making are for good reasoning. In this case, I think, like, someone in the 17th century and up until much more recently who wasn't white wouldn't have been able to have, you know, the education and the privileges that Isaac Newton had, even if they were a scientific genius. A little part of me does think it's not the greatest kind of representation, because it's by dealing with it so flippantly, it's sort of saying, implying that all those issues didn't exist. And I know that's not what they intend. It's just, I think there are better ways to bring more actors of colour into the show than by doing it that way.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. I mean, my issue, I have several issues with it, really. You're depicting a real person, a historical figure, who was white, and it's known that he is white. And I think you're doing that real-life person a disservice by not representing them correctly. You're also potentially misleading a young audience who probably don't really care that much, but you're representing that character in a certain way. And also in terms of representation, whilst I'm all for it, this almost seems like they're saying, well, look, we'll make this character a person of colour. That's enough. Create a new character of colour. Give depth to a new person rather than just say, oh, look, we'll make this character black. Yeah. That'll do. And I think that's, in a way, I find that a bit more offensive than people complaining about colour.
One thing that I thought the Jodie Whittaker era did really well was actually dealing with issues of, you know, historical racism. In the Rosa Parks episode and in Demons of the Punjab, they address those issues head on. And I think that's a more intelligent route, and it's a better educational route for young people watching than just saying, Isaac Newton was mixed race.
Yeah, well, I have seen quite a lot of comments as well with people saying, you know, I mean, personally, I don't think it's the biggest issue in the world, but at the same time, I've seen people saying, you know, if it was the other way round, people would kind of quite rightly be up in arms. You know, if you had a white actor portraying, you know, a black person, then obviously that would be completely unacceptable. And it does seem a bit odd, you know, to kind of have that historical inaccuracy, I guess. And like you were saying, it's not really kind of an accurate, you know, historical representation to kind of young viewers. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think it probably wasn't thought through that kind of, considered that deeply. No. I don't know.
Also, I think it is worth pointing out that actually, apart from his skin tone, Nathaniel Curtis does kind of look like Isaac Newton. The performance is good, so it's not worth complaining about that much.
No.
It's not worth complaining about because it was a throwaway gag in the pre-title sequence. So it would have been possibly more contentious if he'd been a character throughout the episode. Mm. The episode revolved around him. But it was just a joke.
Yeah.
And of course, Nathaniel Curtis has worked with Russell T. Davis before, and he likes working with people he's worked with before.
Yeah.
I've got no big issue with it, really. But I hope that, you know, I hope they did it for the right reasons, not just to say, well, you know, we'll just put a mixed-race person in there to wind people up and to tick a box, because I don't, that sort of stuff does annoy me.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of the fact that, you know, it was kind of just the scene with Isaac Newton was just sort of meant to be a little joke at the beginning of the episode. Yeah. What did people think of the whole Mavity joke thing? Because I personally quite liked it. I thought it was funny. But then at the same time, I thought it would have worked a lot better if they then somehow tied it back into the rest of the episode, because it seemed a little bit of just an odd random scene, and it was funny, but at the same time there was a point where Donna was like, oh, you know, we've got Mavity, and then the doctor kind of looks at her like he knows instinctively that that's wrong, and I kind of when I first saw that, I thought it was going to somehow be tied into the rest of the episode. I thought somehow that was going to become an issue and they were going to somehow have to fix that and go back, or I just thought the episode was somehow going to be connected to the fact that they'd managed to sort of alter the timeline at the very beginning with Newton chose the wrong word. So I don't know, what did people think of that kind of
I thought it was a funny joke. I hope they stick with it in canon and gravity is called Mavity in Doctor Who for the next 60 years.
I genuinely, unless they do, then I think that that's... I feel like they have to do that now, because otherwise it's like kind of a What's bit of happened? A waste of... Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it just struck me as a joke, and I like the fact they referred to it as Mavity, suggesting it was called Mavity, but then he got a bit blurred later on when he referred to it as Gravity again. Have you seen the poster that somebody did, they put online, of Sandra Bullock, George Clooney, Mavity?
Yes. Yes.
I saw that. That was great. That was great. The final couple of quiz questions then. Do you remember, perchance, what the word for number 10 was in the alien language that they encounter?
No. Is my answer to that
your first one that you've the first hurdle that you've fallen at, though? So not bad.
I had a feeling there'd be a question about one of them, which is why I wanted to watch the episode again. So I thought, yeah, one of the questions is going to be about these damn numbers, but no. I can't.
Well, to be fair, it is either you know it or you don't, but it was Fenslaw.
Fenslaw. I was thinking of coleslaw, but I knew it wasn't.
Yeah. not to worry. Final question then. This is also quite a difficult one, I thought. What are the goo-coated, square-shaped things that the Doctor asks Donna to move? What are they called? This is a very difficult one, to be fair. Yeah.
This is... I know the scene. I can't remember what he called them.
Not to worry.
I don't know. You've caught me.
No, I've no idea either.
You've done very well up till now, so they have got progressively harder. So it was base plate repetition filaments, apparently.
Ooh.
So quite a tricky.
I was just gonna say that, but thought, oh, I can't be that.
Of course you were. Yes, base plate repetition filaments.
I was hoping for slightly easier questions, like what does TARDIS stand for? That I could have done.
Oh no, come on, that'd be too easy.
Or even the HADS I could have done as well.
Yes, hostile action displacement system. Yeah. That was a nice concept. But yeah, that brings us to the end of our quiz. I've lost track of the number of questions, actually, but I think you got... How many questions was there? You got about five out of...
I think you got two wrong.
I think you got five out of seven. Five out of seven, yeah. Which is pretty good.
But, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And Paul's a quiz show regular as well.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I've been on Tipping Point, that's great.
Well, while we've got you on, me and Kieran were talking about... We were talking earlier about how we appreciated the fact that there is obviously reference to the Doctor's time as Jodie Whittaker and the Jodie Whittaker era and the monumentous events of Flux and all of that, and we were saying how we liked the fact that was kind of referred to and it wasn't just brushed under the carpet. And I know that unlike a lot of people, you are actually a pretty big fan of Jodie's era, so I wonder if you would like to share some of your thoughts on that.
Well, yes, I mean, it's interesting. Her era is very interesting because I think her first season is quite divisive, and I think Chris Chibnall, I think, did to an extent what Russell T Davis did by having a first series that had very little connection to the past. There were no returning monsters, characters, one or two little references here and there, but he tried to do a sort of a soft relaunch, and which worked really well at first. But I think the problem was a lot of those early episodes, there wasn't much excitement or jeopardy to them. They were quite sort of bland. Although there was some, I think Rose is a terrific episode, as you say, Demons of the Punjab.
Yeah.
And I think Jodie's first episode is still one of the best first episodes for the Doctor because it's so different. It feels different the way it's made. And I think then what he did in his second season, he did again what Russell did, to start reintroducing elements of Doctor Who canon with the Master and the return of the Jadoon and the Daleks and Sidemen and so on. I think that the second series, I think, is really good. Spyfall Part 1 is one of my favourite episodes of what we might call New Who. I think that's so exciting, so cinematic, with a big reveal of the Master. And I think he did interesting things. I think he looked at the idea of the Doctor and thought, well, over the years, we've found out so much about the Doctor as a Time Lord who's gone on the run. And he thought, well, perhaps there's more to it than that. And I think that the Timeless Child I know people get really worked up about it. They think it destroys canon. But I think it's a really interesting thing and an interesting way of who is the Doctor again. Because the Doctor, it turns out, the Doctor is a Time Lord, but isn't. There's a bit more. So in a way, it's gone right back to scratch. We don't actually know who the Doctor is because he, she is some creature from another dimension. Yeah. We don't know where he or she comes from. And I think that's really interesting, whether they ever revisit it or not. That's always the mystery hanging in the air. And I know fans have said, William Hartnell isn't the first Doctor anymore. Well, he sort of is, because that's where the Doctor's adventures begin, as the Doctor we know now.
Yeah.
He/she doesn't remember anything before that. So, yeah, it hasn't changed anything. But unfortunately, again, fans have got themselves worked up into this frenzy because their beloved canon has been tampered with. But if they stopped and thought about it, it actually hasn't. It's just been added to, and I think that's really exciting.
Well, I think that's a really nice, positive way of looking at it, because I think you're right in the sense that I know myself and a lot of other fans have kind of said, well, you know, the Timeless Child storyline kind of perhaps actually gives away too much about the Doctor, and we want that kind of sense of mystery to remain. But I think that's interesting what you're saying, that, you know, actually it only kind of adds to the mystery, and at the end of the day there is still a lot to discover about the Doctor. Cool. And, you know, we still don't know, you know, presumably we know he had a family, we know he must have had children, otherwise where did Susan come from? And, you know, so we still know kind of next to nothing about the Doctor's life or lives on Gallifrey. So I think that is definitely a good way of looking at it, that in actual fact, you know, it's not ruining the mystery, because there is still a lot to discover. Well, I wasn't a massive fan of that storyline personally, but I can see, you know, I don't think it ruins it completely like some people.
I don't think it does. Because I think if you were talking about Doctor Who now to somebody who doesn't know what it is, you could no longer say, oh, the Doctor is a Time Lord from Gallifrey who left Gallifrey because he was bored, because that isn't actually the origin as such. You could say, well, actually, we don't know who the Doctor is.
Mm.
It's some sort of creature from another place who became part of, who instigated the Time Lords, if you like. And it would be a cult. You probably wouldn't go into that detail with somebody who doesn't know much about Doctor Who, but just saying the Doctor is a Time Lord. It's true, but there's a bit more to it as well. Yeah. And what I liked as well is that Jodie Whittaker at the end, she knows the secret is there, and she hid it in the TARDIS because she actually didn't want to know.
Mm.
But it is there. So, you know, the answer is there, but she doesn't want to know. And I think that's the way to leave it, to be honest.
I think I'm largely in agreement with you, Paul, in that I do like the ideas of the Timeless Child, and I like how it adds to the mystery of the Doctor. I just think I like the ideas more than the execution in the Chris Chibnall era. Like, there's a lot of those scripts in that era I thought could have benefited a lot from from an extra draft. Like, the Timeless Children, it is just like an episode in which the Master explains things to the Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
It's a PowerPoint presentation rather than a drama. I do have some sympathy with you know, Flux was made under COVID conditions, and there was obviously a lot going on behind the scenes. But I also think there are across the era, especially towards the end, a lot of ideas that could have been presented in a more dramatically interesting way.
I think that's true. I think there were loads of really, really good ideas that weren't presented well enough. As you say, I think several scripts needed either a top to bottom overhaul or a good polish, because you have. You know, I was so disappointed by the Sea Devil episode, because I've been sort of looking forward to seeing the Sea Devils again. Yes. And that was such a mess in every regard.
To be honest, I think Chris Chibnall has, you know, sort of slyly acknowledged that that was a mess, that a lot went wrong on that episode.
I do think a lot of that era was kind of let down by the writing. I mean, I don't think... A lot of people seem to kind of have it out for Jodie Whittaker, but I personally think it was... Because I'm not a massive fan of the era myself, but I think the majority of the problems definitely do come from the writing rather than, you know, as some people insist, you know, the fact that it was a female Doctor. I mean, I'm kind of a bit of a weird case in that I do personally, and I say this as a feminist, you know, I personally don't, I didn't like having a female Doctor. I was interested to see how it went, and I could see why they did it, and I was as excited to try it as the next person, but I don't personally believe that it worked for various reasons. I mean, I've But I know that's just kind of my personal feeling, because I've always, to me, the Doctor has always been very much a bloke. And like,
yeah,
to me personally, it didn't work to have a female Doctor, and it was too much of a detour from the kind of, you know, grandfatherly old man figure that the Doctor is. And to me it kind of missed the mark. But I don't believe that fundamentally that was the main problem with the Whittaker era. And I definitely think, you know, I'm happy, you know, to say that I didn't like having a female Doctor, because I know I'm not saying that from a place of sexism, but I do believe that a lot of people were simply saying that from a place of sexism. And it's,
well, yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? The sexist view and the creative view. And I agree with you. I was also apprehensive about it. I sort of knew it was coming because it had been building towards it, and there was this huge audience that seemed to be quietly demanding, it's time for a female Doctor. So when it happened, I thought, well, let's see what happens. And I thought that it worked for me more than it didn't, because Jodie Whittaker was so, her performance was so endearing. She was so enthusiastic off screen and on screen. She just had this energy about her. Although I think initially she was very David Tennant, and I think I might have even said this in Starburst, it did look as if she'd watched some clips of David Tennant and thought, oh, that's the Doctor, and sort of copied his sort of eccentricity and energy. But I think part of the problem as well, for me, looking at her performance, you've got a female Doctor, but for whether you think it's good or a bad thing, they didn't really accentuate that very much. Her clothes were fairly sort of sexless. They weren't feminine. She didn't come across necessarily as a woman, if you see
what
I mean.
This is one of the main issues that I had, because I was like, you know, if you're going to have a female Doctor, I was waiting for the kind of, you know, funny... You know, you've got to make something of that. I was waiting. Obviously, you wouldn't actually have to show anything, but I was waiting for the, like, funny trying on a bra for the first time scene. and we never got any of that. We never got any of the kind of what it means to be a woman, which I think it's almost kind of more sexist.
See,
to totally ignore that, you know, like...
I was fully in favour of having a female Doctor, and I think she was well cast and it was a great performance. And I don't think necessarily... she needs to play the character that differently because the Doctor's female. Like, I think ultimately it is still the same character, just in a different body, and adding Jodie Whittaker's own personality and quirks onto it. What I would have liked to have seen more, maybe, that we did see once in The Witchfinders, is you know, how she's treated differently because of being a woman. I thought The Witchfinders was a really interesting episode, because it was about her ending up in the witch hunts and, you know, being persecuted as a witch in a way that, you know, if you threw a male Doctor into that situation, it would have played out very differently.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I think personally I wanted more of exploring what the difference would be if there was a female Doctor. Because, I mean, obviously I'm not saying it has to be kind of all episode, every episode. You don't want to kind of ram it in people's faces too much. But I definitely think part of the entire point of trying a gender swap on this character is to comment on, you know, the issues that women faced and still do face in society. And I felt like it was a bit, as I say, I felt like it was almost doing the opposite of what it set out to achieve by trying to pretend that there was absolutely no difference between, you know, the Doctor as Peter Capaldi and the Doctor as Jodie Whittaker. I simply felt like there needed to be more exploration of, also, this is a character that's been male for 2,000 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
they might not be happy to be in a female body. There might be some gender dysphoria there. There might be some kind of, you know, what we need to actually explore what the impact of essentially, you know, having a sex change is on this character. I don't think you can completely ignore that. And I think it kind of does a disservice to sort of not really fully address that.
I think maybe the idea, though, is that also, like, Time Lords are in some ways a more advanced society with us, and place less, you know, emphasis on the importance of gender. Like we were saying before about the 14th Doctor in this episode casually calling Isaac Newton hot. And you said, Paul, because that's not that much of an issue for him. Yeah. So maybe as well, like, Time Lords have sort of got over some of the preoccupations with gender differences that we as a human society still have.
But at
it's
the same time,
though,
I think, you know,
yeah,
kids,
I agree with you, Beth, that having been a man for 2,000 years, you would expect more of a reaction for the Doctor than, oh, I'm a woman now, and then just carrying on.
You would
expect a, not to constantly harp on about it or agonize over it, but just approach things slightly differently from a different perspective, being a different gender. And I think that that was where you sort of think, well, what was the point of making the Doctor a woman if you're not going to make a point of it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you don't want to hammer it home, but there are certain points in certain stories where it could have been flagged up a bit more as relevant to the plot, certainly in the historical stories, that would have been more noticeable than in a modern day story. I think they sort of fudged it a bit.
Definitely. And on that interesting note, I think that's all we've got time for. So we will have to let you go. Well done on a very decent score in the quiz. Thank you very much for participating. Thank you for coming on. It's been lovely to have you on the show.
I very much enjoyed it. And congratulations on the podcast. It's nice to see Starburst have a Doctor Who podcast presence again. And I also want to mention, I want to say two words to you. Bernard Cribbins. There we are.
We're going to have a little...
How have we not talked about that yet?
I don't know how we've not talked about it yet. We will be discussing him, I'm sure, as we round up the pod. Well, let's get... Just before you go then, let's get your reaction to that.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I knew he was coming back for one scene because he was taken ill afterwards. And I didn't know what the scene was going to be. But then I thought perhaps it would be in the third episode. But it was just lovely to see him. And it was a genuine surprise because when Donna opens the TARDIS, she's got this big grin and there he is. And his performance was so good. He just stepped back into that role just as he played it last time we saw him. That sort of enthusiasm and awe. And it was just this lovely, lovely little CODIS. It is a shame we don't get to see more of him because he was taken ill quite soon afterwards. But it was just so nice that he was able to come back just for that scene. And it was just joyous because he's such a legend, and to see him, that little dedication to him at the end after the credits was fantastic.
He is a legend indeed. Lovely to have him back.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming on. We've loved having you. We'll hopefully get you back on at some point.
Well, I'm free next week.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you both. All the best to you. Take care. Have a good day.
Goodbye. Thank you.
You too. See ya.
Bye.
The lovely Paul Mount there. And once again, we have been completely waylaid by our love for Doctor Who, and we have gone far over the time. I'm proving incredibly bad at timekeeping, but we have just got time, I think, to read out some people's thoughts. We've been getting your comments and reactions to the episode, so let's have a look at what you guys have been saying about what you thought of Wild Blue Yonder.
Thank you to everyone who's responded on Facebook and Twitter. Pop-up Puppet Cinema says it was fun, enjoyed the Slowbots Marvin vibes. Not sure why the TARDIS had to leg it when the transforming ship could have moved it around the hull. Because of plot reasons, that's why, probably. Andy Raff says it's an excellent episode, one of the strongest in quite a while in terms of a contained story, well told, with both good character moments and peril, and a nice mix of seriousness and humour. He was really impressed.
Definitely.
Paul Weatherly says both specials have been great, real return to form. Peter Harrison says it's a solid episode and wonders if people would have been kinder to it if it wasn't a 60th special and just a mid-season filler episode. It's up there with Blink as one of the off-the-beaten-track standout episodes.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that Russell T. Davis might have done a disservice in some ways to this episode by kind of, falsely... Well, it's not really his fault, but kind of falsely giving people the impression that it might be more of a kind of 60th spectacular, as we were saying. I definitely think these episodes would perhaps have been received better had they not been for a 60th anniversary. I definitely think people were perhaps expecting something more like the 50th anniversary, rightly or wrongly. I think people were perhaps expecting, more kind of multi-companion episodes or multi-Doctor episodes rather than, as we were discussing, kind of a mini-series. But I think once you've kind of got used to the fact that it's a mini-series, it's definitely very solid episodes.
Yeah, we have another one from Laurie McHale, kind of touching on the same issue, who thinks, as Doctor Who episodes, I've really enjoyed both of the specials, but as anniversary episodes that are meant to be celebrating the whole history of the show, they just don't feel that way. Which isn't to say they need to be crammed with multiple Doctors, but any sense of it being a holistic celebration of Doctor Who, I don't know if that's a typo or a pun there, just isn't there. They feel like a revisitation of one season from 15 years ago. So as a series of Doctor Who stories, it's been a pretty good run so far, but as a Diamond Anniversary celebration, eh.
Yeah.
That's kind of touching on what we've discussed earlier on, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been saying that. And I think that's a good point, that it wouldn't necessarily have to be like a multi-Doctor story for it to be more like a 60th anniversary special. I think there are other ways that they could have made it more sort of 60th anniversary feel. And, you know, I don't think the fifth, you know, other, obviously we had both David Tennant and Matt Smith, but the 50th anniversary, we didn't necessarily have kind of every single Doctor and companion ever returning, but they still managed to kind of make it feel more like a kind of big 50th celebration. And I think there were ways that they could have done that with these 60th episodes that didn't necessarily involve it being a big, you know, multi-Doctor finale. So, yeah, I think this is a point that people are going to keep making, probably.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And I think as well, like, in terms of, there's maybe been a bit of initial disappointment, but I think in the long term, people will come back to look on this episode as maybe better than they've initially thought about it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I think it definitely grows on you, as I say, with the, I think I said earlier, like with a second viewing, I think the episodes kind of get even better. And I definitely think there's more to come next week. I think if we are going to see any kind of 60th spectacular feel and returning companions, then I think next week will be the week, because isn't it strongly suspected that Mel is returning next week?
Yes, she's not been confirmed to be, well, she's been confirmed to be in next year's series, but right. I think there's been like an image from next week's where you can see her in the background.
Yes, so that should be interesting. And if there is going to be a kind of, you know, companions returning type story, then I think next week we can hopefully look forward to perhaps a little bit more of that. I don't know.
Yeah, let's have one more comment from Martin Eden, who says he's not a huge fan of the whole New Who era. I'm more of a classic Who person, but blimey, this ep blew my socks off and made me want to watch the past few years of episodes, and it just shows what can be done with sci-fi shows. More please.
Well, I hope if he does go back and watch the past few years' episodes, he's not overly disappointed by Jodie Whittaker's era. You never know. He might be a fan like Paul, but my experience has been that people don't tend to be overly enamoured with that era. So I hope if he does go back and watch that he's not kind of too disappointed.
Pick and choose the good ones.
Yeah, pick out the good ones. Like, to be fair, the Rosa Parks episode, as you were saying, I think is very, very good. So, yeah, interesting comments. I think all along a sort of similar track there. But I think overall it sounds like people have been pretty impressed with this episode, and rightly so, because I think it was definitely a strong episode. Just before we round up, let's have a bit of...
Who Knew?
Yes, Who Knew, indeed. The section where we bring you any little bits and bobs of Doctor Who news that we've picked out this week, or any controversies that warrant some discussion. To be fair, I think we've done most of the controversy discussing with Paul there. But there's a couple of bits and bobs that people might be interested in the news that I think we can pick out.
Yeah, so I think the main bit this week is that they've announced some details about the Christmas special. It's going to be called The Church on Ruby Road, and it features goblins as the main villain, and it will air on Christmas Day at 5:55 p.m. am I right?
Yes, I think that's when they've said, which is a bit of an odd time slot, but one could only presume that they couldn't quite get to 6 p.m.
Yeah, so they've got to work around Strictly and the King and all of that stuff.
Yeah, to be fair, it's a good Christmas lineup this year, because I think we've got we've got the Strictly special as well. We've got the Ghosts Christmas special, so there's quite a few good things I think this year. Yeah, it features goblins, so that'll be interesting seeing what they do with that as a little villain for the episode. For those of you who don't want to know too much about the plot, I suggest, we probably should have said that before we mentioned goblins, I do apologise. But if you're the kind of person who prefers not to know any details about the plot, maybe don't listen to this next kind of 60 seconds or so. But I believe it also has been confirmed that it is going to feature Michelle Greenidge as Ruby's mum, Carla, and that it turns out that Ruby actually has a bit of a mystery surrounding her, because it turns out that she was actually abandoned as a baby outside the church on Ruby Road, hence her name. So I can only imagine that presumably Carla must be her adoptive mother or something of that ilk. We also know that it's going to feature Anita Dobson. Who was she playing as?
She's
again?
Playing the neighbour, I think.
The neighbour.
And it's got
Mrs. Flood.
Yes, that's right. And Angela, oh God, I've forgotten her name. Should have taken notes. Angela Winter. As Ruby's grandmother.
Yes, who is called Cherry, I believe. So already I quite like the fact that we're having set up...
Cherry Sunday.
Yeah, Cherry Sunday. I quite like the name choices here. I don't know whether that's going to mean anything or whether they're just interesting name choices, but I do quite like the sort of names that they're going for there. I like the fact that it's obviously already setting up that Ruby's got a family that we're presumably going to see, and that they're presumably going to be sort of involved with the Doctor as well, which that'll be quite nice, I think, because that I'm imagining a bit of a return to the kind of the Russell T Davies era of you know, the companions' families being a bit more involved with, you know, Jackie Tyler and
yes.
Mickey and all of that, because I think... For me, that was one of the things that I think was slightly lacking in Matt Smith's era, in the Stephen Moffat era. I always kind of wanted to see a little bit more of the companions' family. So I'm hoping we might get a little bit of return to kind of like funny family members there.
I think we will. Apparently, there's also a musical number in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The goblins do a little song.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is going to be, you know... exactly what you want after your Christmas dinner.
That's a good way to do that, actually, because I know a lot of series have been going down the route of having like a musical episode, and I personally wasn't quite sure how I like, because I've not watched the Star Trek one actually, but I know there's also a Star Trek musical episode which I'm going to have to watch eventually.
I hear that's very good. I've not seen it.
Yeah,
either.
No.
I love the Buffy one. The classic.
I haven't seen that either. But no, I was slightly apprehensive about the idea of them doing that with Doctor Who. So perhaps this is the way they're getting around it. They're having a little musical number from the Goblins.
I mean,
but...
Doctor Who's it's a very camp show. They can fit it in.
To be fair, I feel like of all the shows that you can do that with, I feel like it would work.
Although I thought there was going to be a musical episode in the next series, because they've got the one with Jinx Monsoon where she's dressed as like a piano.
Oh.
I think there's a musical element to that as well.
There's a point, yeah.
I don't know
probably.
If it's a full-on musical, but it's definitely worked into it somehow, I think.
No, I reckon there probably is.
The whole Shooty Gatwa era is musical.
It's a musical spectacular, guys. You heard it here first. But no, I completely forgot about Jinx Monsoon being in it. But yeah, if there is going to be a musical episode, I would presume it would possibly feature her. So that, yeah, that could be interesting. Yeah, so goblins. Anyway, I'm sure that'll be a fun little villain for them to face at Christmas. The other little bit of news for any Magic the Gathering fans out there. Don't know how many of you play Magic the Gathering, but I know it's quite a popular game. There has been, well, back in October, they obviously released the Doctor Who Commander decks of cards, and we're now actually getting new cards featuring the new Doctor Who characters. So we're getting a card with David Tennant as the 14th Doctor, Neil Patrick Harris as the Toymaker, Yasmin Finney as Rose, and it's going to be part of a drop called the Secret Lair times Doctor Who Regeneration, apparently. So any Magic the Gathering fans out there, I'm sure you'll hopefully enjoy that. So I have actually seen some of the cards, like not the new ones, but the ones they released back in October. One of my friends is a massive Magic the Gathering fan, so he showed me some of his Doctor Who cards that he'd got. So they do look quite cool. They're really nice artwork, actually.
Good, yes. I've never played it, but that sounds like great news for people who care about that kind of thing. Yeah, the artwork does look good.
They are very pretty cards. I believe that you can... I know they're more for like playing with, but I believe you can also collect them. So it's that'll be quite an interesting one for any collectors out there anyway. And yeah, that brings us to the end of the show, I think. Time always flies so quickly. Honestly, I am going to have to get better at timekeeping as well, because we're always having so much fun discussing the episode that I'm supposed to be in charge of the time, and I always fail miserably at keeping the time on this podcast. But anyway, we hope you've enjoyed this week's pod and hearing from Paul there on his thoughts on this week's show. We will be back next week to discuss The Giggle. That should be an interesting one. And as always, if you have any thoughts, theories, reactions, if you want to talk about anything we've discussed in the podcast and tell us we're completely wrong or agree with us or whatever it is you want to do, feel free to get in touch via social media. We're always interested to hear your thoughts, so please do reply to any of our posts or get in contact yourselves. Or you can email, we do have an email address. It's thebluebox.podcast@starburstmagazine.com, so feel free to email as well. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love as many people as possible to get involved and tell us your thoughts on the show and on each episode of Doctor Who. And it's great to hear from you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I'll see you next week.
See you next week, guys.